Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Well, Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer at Galileo Capital. I suppose that was quite a nice little segue into what was a muffled market today, really sinking from the get-go, the rand's weakening, we've got no power into the weekend, the IMF and its Article 4 report are pointing to a bailout sooner rather than later. Is there anything to keep you cheerful this Friday?
Jeez, that sounds like a bottle store weekend, doesn't it?
Well, if you could get into one, but most of them are closed because of load shedding. It's quite an irony that that Basil Reed, here we have one of the country's top construction firms going into business rescue just as the Soccer World Cup kicks off, exactly 8 years after we hosted our own World Cup. And we know that that was really the apex of the construction industry in this country. After that, it was all competition, commission, fines, collusion, and the industry has just never been able to recover since.
Yeah, I mean, let's not also forget another very important factor for the building industry, which is the whole process of being involved in mining. I mean, construction is, mining is a very, very important client to the construction companies. So we've got Basil Reed that just hit the wall, according to that announcement today. You've got Avinga, which is basically in need of some serious help from some friends. And clearly the rest of the industry putting out results that at best are just level pegging and at worst just plain out horrendous. This industry has been thoroughly hammered, and I think it's a very important litmus test for the whole of economy because, you know, we hear assorted plans on what can one do, etc., etc., but from, say, the likes of the IMF or within the ANC or so on. But quite frankly, we need to start looking for some quick wins now, just to nudge the economy along. I mean, one of the obvious ones is to ram through building plans ASAP. It's easy work. There are a pipeline of backlog plans there.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of low to medium skilled. I mean, get it done, guys. I mean, this is where it starts. This is where you can get some rubber to hit the road.
Talking about rubber hitting the road, an example of where regulation that is very well intentioned, procurement regulation from National Treasury imposing a 30% set aside for locals or local businesses, is almost bringing construction to a halt in SANRAL projects all over the country. It was one of the big lead stories in MoneyWeb this week. Antoinette Slubbert interviewing a host of professional engineers who say that projects have ground to a halt because of mafia-style groupings who are rocking up on the back of buckies, stopping any work from going ahead because they claim 30% of the project without going to tender, without following the formal channels. But this is what happens when you have a state driving dependency, driving a sense of entitlement.
Yeah, completely counterproductive. And quite frankly, we've got an SADF that we haven't got any wars at the moment because, I mean, all of the wars, frankly, have been economic civil wars in this place. So we might as well redeploy them to protect mines and to protect construction sites.
And power stations. You know, I look at what's going on with Eskom. If you're going to play hardball with the unions, then we need someone with an iron will. And I can think of a certain a PM who would have fit the bill quite well. Send out the SANDF, get them to surround the national key points at those
absolutely,
power stations.
Absolutely, they are key points.
And to keep the economy running. And the fact that we haven't seen that means this administration is still seen to be weak. And quite frankly, NUMSA have outmaneuvered the rumophoria and snuffed that light out completely.
Yeah, so if we look at, I mean, the Eskom staffing complement, I mean, that was 33,000 about 10 years ago. It's 48,000 now. The amount of power generated has gone up by about 6%. So we've used a 50% higher staffing complement to generate about 6% more power. Sounds like a rotten transaction. And frankly, the stables need cleaning, especially when you consider just how much Eskom staff cost. I mean, they're basically on an average around about 750,000 to 800,000 rand per head, the most expensive staff complement in the country. And even if you exclude management, that number is still at a rather whopping whopping 600,000. Yeah. Perhaps we could emphasize the point by all sending in our CVs, because I think most South Africans would rather like that number, you know?
Hell, I could do with a job like that, Warwick. Now, if we look at what's being done currently to ensure that we get this economy back on track, business, yes, has got the CEO initiative and has been very proactive through the end of the Zuma administration to say no more to state capture. But now what we're seeing, we had Mike Brown at the Ned Group Investment Treasurers Conference recently saying that this cannot continue. This real rise in wages at Eskom over the past decade is unsustainable. And I'm thankful that we're now seeing business leaders of the caliber of Mike Brown saying enough is enough, actually. We have to resist any further temptation to give in to labor demands in an environment where there is just no more money. The cupboards are bare.
Yeah, I mean, bottom line is, the actual result is actually almost upon us. We're now in the situation where, frankly, if we're going to win the discussion, without having to implode the whole economy first by borrowing and borrowing and borrowing to just persist, we basically have to shoot a hostage. And that's going to come through in one of the state-owned enterprises. I'm not sure which one, but we can all guess which one is a likely candidate.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Coronation has decided to shoot its investment hostage. It's sold Steinhoff, saying it's a wipeout. After publishing quite a long note to clients not too long ago, saying and detailing why it believed there was still value, unfortunately, that value no longer exists, according to Coronation, one of the largest asset managers in the country. Would you agree?
Totally. I mean, you and I were huffing and puffing quite extensively in January and February about shareholder litigation and how useless it was. And here we go. This is the net result, because what happens is, with this kind of litigation, one group of shareholders tries to position itself ahead of others. So all the rest naturally say, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And you all wind up in the same situation where you're all suing for the same coin. Net result is no one wants to basically help the business, and in the belief, understandably, that if they do help out Steinhoff, they lose out in shareholder litigation if that is ever successful. So why help it? Instead, I mean, we should have seen the VEB going after Deloitte from day one instead of bothering with Steinhoff itself. I mean, you know, Deloitte is where you wanted to have a go at it anyway, with the indemnity cover and so on. Why waste your time with the target?
Don't get me started on the auditors and the accountants, Warwick. We still have yet to see an accountant stripped of their designation after being found complicit in a fraud or large-scale corruption. It would be very interesting to see how SAICA or IRBA deal with the whole Marcus Huster matter. But currently, the regulators are just not fit for purpose, I hate to say it. Now, currency trading is one of those things that I tend to stay away from, because you see the ads, you know, make a 600% return by trading dollar yen pairs, and it's always sold on the back pages of very dodgy publications. But you've kicked the bricks on a few currency trading funds recently. What did you find?
Okay, so I think what concerns me with currency trading is that it's in an environment which seems so appalling. It's a kind of stick that a drowning man will have a go at. I remember in a lot of trading schemes coming out in 1998, as the economy basically was drying up, and at the same time markets roaring ahead, and I sort of get a sense of deja vu here that this is getting kicked up again. And basically, I mean, with currencies, what you tend to find is that long-term trends are actually quite strong. You get some sort of short-term zigzagging around, which traders try to have a go at. But in order to earn a meaningful return, they really have to gear themselves to the eyeballs. And by that, I mean 10 times, even more. It's insane levels. Because quite frankly, the moves aren't big enough otherwise, and especially when you're doing these sort of very short-term trading. But the problem with that 10 times gearing is that when you get a big trend reversion, it can blow away a massive amount of your returns. I mean, it takes a 5% move and gears it up into a 50% move. That's like going through the 2008 crash in one day. Very unpleasant, naturally. So that's my concern there. And yet, if you load that gearing to say, call it 10 times, I mean that slashes the typical returns by a massive degree. And when you go to 2 times, the returns frankly aren't worth it. You might as well just have your money in a bank account.
Well, there we go. So if you were looking at trading forex pairs. I think that pretty much in a very pithy 1 minute pours cold water on that idea, I should say. I'm just having a look at a note that's flashed across my screen from my producer. Ronaldo has been fined $21.8 million for tax evasion. That's quite a sum for a player who is valued by Transfer Market recently at 1.7 billion rands worth. They were having a look at the most expensive players in the World Cup. Neymar, Messi were top at 2.3 billion. I wonder if that's going to be playing on the back of his mind as he kicks off against his arch rival Spain tonight.
Yeah, it was a rotten start. Well, clearly Portugal not necessarily a low tax destination if you're a dodgy football player.
He's playing his club football in Spain as well, where we know the Argentinian Messi has had quite a messy affair with the tax authorities as well. The Football World Cup, are you supporting anyone? Have you drawn anyone in an office pool? I've got Iceland. One clap.
Okay, so I'm quite agnostic about it. I tend to look at these as an opportunity to sort of test efficient market ideas and passive strategies and so on. And actually, I mean, trying to make money betting on the World Cup, let me tell you, that's not easy. The last one, I basically used an efficient market type approach across a pool called Super Brew. I came in right about the top 2%. And I can tell you that because I used bookies odds, I wouldn't have beaten the bookies. So there you go. That's how hard it is to actually beat the bookies in the World Cup.
And as we've spoken about before on the show, we know that those markets can be gamed as well. If you look at taking a punt on a Brexit or a Trump or a political event. So, caveat emptor. I think let the buyer beware. And there's another interesting stat that was published this week in the Business Day, I think it was, just having a look at how quiet the markets tend to be during the World Cup. In the build-up, a lot of traders kick back, specifically in Latin American countries. And then they can actually be quite volatile. There's data tracking this that seems to indicate a lot of traders, and this would be borne out by the fact that a lot of them are men as well, are linking their trading to the emotional roller coaster of their football teams during the World Cup. So not the best way, not the best investment strategy in the world. As we end off, Warwick, I'm going to pick Portugal. Who's your money with in the big Iberian showdown tonight?
All right, then. Well, I'll go with my ancestors. Oh, you mean tonight? Right. I think we'll give it to Spain, but by the width of a chip.
Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer, Galileo Capital, giving it to Spain. I'm going Portugal. We'll see what David Shapiro has to say up next.